Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we'll be hearing Dave teach about unity and loyalty, why that is so absolutely important, why it's so absolutely vital in your business, in your life, in your family, with everything that you do. We will also have, and I am so crazy excited about this, a special interview with Coach Tony Dungy. Yep, Tony Dungy is going to be on the show today, who is not only a Super Bowl winning coach, but also a number one New York Times best-selling author. This is a fun day for me. So, who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. And I am so glad that you are joining us today. What can you expect out of the podcast? As always, the same thing. We want to bring you information that's going to change your life. We want to bring you information that's going to change your business. We want to bring you information that's going to change the way you think or cause you to think either way. That is our goal. We want to know if we're doing it. If we are, let us know. Give us some response on this. Tell us if you like it. Tell us if you don't like it. Tell us if you're sharing it with your friends and family and people that you work with. Ways that you can do that? There's a couple ways you can do that. One of those would be on Twitter. You can follow us at Entree Leadership. That is at E-N-T-R-E Leadership. As well as podcast at EntreeLeadership.com. You can follow me at my blog at ChrisLicurdo.com or on Twitter at Chris Licurdo. Today, we're going to be talking about unity and loyalty. It all boils down to a core operating rule for us here, and that is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Plain and simple. That's it. If it's not the way that you would want to be treated, then don't treat somebody else that way. A team can do anything if they're unified. If they're not, let me tell you, you are going to spend a lot of time trying to fix it. You're going to spend a lot of time trying to fix problems. So, let's get right into the lesson for today. Here is Dave Ramsey on building unity and loyalty.
Building unity and loyalty. I will go ahead and just put you a big disclaimer on the front of this thing. You're going to do all of this stuff. You're going to love it. Because, I mean, how fun would it actually be to be paying people and loving on people and in return they were loyal? How fun would that be? Say fun. I mean, really, that would make it fun to come to the office in the morning. If these people that I'm pouring into actually reciprocated. Dad blame. But they don't. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you this. You have two options. You can do none of this stuff and none of them will be loyal. Or you can do this stuff and a large section of them will be loyal, but they'll still be the ones that break your heart. You'll still get your heart broken. So it's better to have loved, right? You know, it's better to have given it a shot and just risk that. But go ahead and tell you up front, be grown-ups about this. You got to know that some people are just idiots. Some people's parents are cousins. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do for them, right? And so just know going in, and it may be the one that you never thought. You know, et tu, Brute? You know, really? Is it really you? You know, it may blow your mind. But I will tell you this. It is one of the most... If you can get everybody unified and you can get everyone on the loyalty page, it adds a level of richness, a level of depth to coming to work as the owner, the leader, whatever we want to call you in your particular type of organization. But it just, it changes the whole thing because there's always this human tendency to fall off into the us against them thing. Management versus labor. That there's a human tendency to fall there, and you've got to intentionally work at changing that. And that's what this lesson's about. There's an old Bible story, you know, it's kind of obscure, but not really. Any of you ever heard the Bible story of the Tower of Babel? Couple of you. Okay. Well, those of you that haven't heard it, basically a quick synopsis was that the people gathered and they began to worship their own abilities rather than worship God, and so they built a tower in a location called Babel. Thus we get babbling. I'll get to that in a minute. But You know, but basically then God looked down and he saw this tower and he was not pleased. He wanted them to be, that they were worshiping their own abilities, their own engineering feat. And so he scattered them throughout, scattered the people throughout the earth and confused their languages, thus babbling. And that's where we get that. But and so it's kind of a negative Bible story. It's kind of a negative in that the people misbehaved and God dispersed them to keep them from misbehaving. But there's an interesting positive note in here, that a takeaway that you need to pick up, because it really does open up things. It's very interesting. The Lord came down to the city and to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And listen to this. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they have one language. And this is what they do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. When the people are one, and they're of one language, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. When you can get 3 people working, 30 people working, 300 people working in unison, in synchronicity, you create a power in that oneness that allows you to defeat unbelievable odds. It allows you to go places that you never thought you could go. It is one of the major differences in an organization of mediocrity and an organization of excellence. When a small band of people can band together in such a way that they've got each other's back, there's unity and there's loyalty, nothing that they set their mind to do will be withheld from them. That's how powerful this principle is this morning. It's an exciting way to start. It's a really, really exciting way to start the day. Listen, our core foundational thing for all the team issues is this right here. Treat other people like you want to be treated. You want loyalty? Give loyalty. Corporate America is always griping about, we don't have anybody loyal. It's because you're not loyal to them. First thing comes up, you just lay off a bunch of them. Anytime we want to increase our P&L, anytime we want to increase our profits for the quarter, we just axe a whole bunch of people like they're units of production, not human beings with dreams, fears, and children. And when you get that cold and you start treating people like units of production, and then you turn around and expect loyalty back from them, that makes you a moron. That's ridiculous. And so, you know, we really have to put on, if we're wanting something, we have to give it first. You know, the old story Zig Ziglar used to tell, he said, don't stand in front of the stove and say, give me heat. How about putting some wood in there? You have to give something to get something if you want reciprocation. And so do unto others as you have them do unto you. I know it sounds real basic, but I tell you what, that one will take you a long way. Anytime you're in a conflict, anytime there's this multi-layered drama, the situation you're dealing with and you don't know what to do, I can't figure out the ethics of this, I don't know how to properly put my head around what to do for the team here, then stop and go, what if I was in his shoes? What if I was in her shoes? Let's just walk over here for a second and go, I'm 27 years old. I got 2 little kids. I'm freaking out. The guy's standing up there saying this stuff that's owned the company for 10 years. How's this guy getting this? What's going on? Take that stuff and insert it into your programs. Now you got programs at work. Take that stuff and insert it into your methodologies. Now you got methodologies that work. You got to put a spirit over this thing. They are not going to be loyal to you until they know you care about them. They're not going to be. Please don't expect that. Well, it's just business. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's your life. You pour everything you got into this deal. You wring every little drop out to where at night when you get home, you're just completely drained. You don't leave anything on the field. I know you. I'm one of you. It's not just business. This is our lives. It's who we are. And we get to the end of our lives and it's all we did was make widgets. We weren't much. We need to have carried this a little bit further. There's a place we can go with this. Now, again, after you do all of that, expect your heart to be broken occasionally. But do it anyway. It's worth it. When you would expect to be praised, praise somebody. When you expect grace, give some grace. When you'd expect your pay to be changed, change it.
My favorite part of that whole lesson is the part about the Tower of Babel, where God says, these people are so stinking unified. These people are so together. They are so in one accord that they can do anything. There's nothing that can hold them back. That, folks, is when you reach true success. That's when your team is firing on all cylinders. That is what you're looking for. You're looking for people to come together and be so unified and be so on the same page that nothing can hold them back. When they're not, well, you know what that looks like. You're either working with it or have worked with it somewhere in your past. When they're not unified, it's really a pain in the backside because you have to spend your time fixing problems. You have to spend your time going through junk and pulling stuff out into the middle, into the open, and having to fix it. That's not worth it. Let's focus on the unity. I can tell you, I know a friend of mine had a situation where a guy at his work came to him because he wasn't getting information from another person in the company. And he came to him and he said, what is the deal here? And he flashed his title and he talked about how important he was and how come he's not getting the information, but my buddy was getting the information. And he said, well, it's simple. I've spent time with him. I work with him. I give him what he needs. When he needs something from me, I give it to him. I spend time with him personally. We've been to each other's homes. We've been to football games together. We've been to whatever. Because of that, there's unity between those two people. So if you're not doing that, if you're not working on that in your business, if you're not working on that with your team members, if you're not working with that with your leadership, then folks, let me tell you, you're not going to be unified. Don't be surprised. Instead, do everything you can to make sure that you are on the same page. As you become unified, as your team members become more loyal because they see that you actually care about them, then your team will start firing on all cylinders. All right, now we are moving on to an interview that I'm extremely excited about. Today, we are talking to Coach Tony Dungy, 2007 Super Bowl winning head coach and NBC's Football Night in America analyst. Also a pretty stinking cool guy. I mean, this is a guy I look up to. This is a guy that, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there that you can be very excited about because they're winning coaches. This is a winning man. This is a winning human being. Dungy's memoir, Quiet Strength, The Principles, Practices, and Priorities of a Winning Life, rocketed to the top spot on the New York Times bestsellers list in August of 2007. And more importantly, impacted countless lives. With more than 1 million copies sold, Quiet Strength is one of the best-selling sports-related titles in history. In history, period. His second book, Uncommon, Finding Your Path to Significance, reached number 2 on the New York Times bestsellers list in February of 2009 and has sold more than 300,000 copies. Why is he selling so well? Because this is real stuff. In The Mentor Leader, which is just another fabulous book, Dungy makes a case for the importance of mentoring as a tool for transformation, both in individuals and teams. Now listen, he describes the 7 keys of mentoring leadership and why they're so effective, why mentor leadership brings out the best in people. I come across thousands of leaders all the time, and there's no mentoring going on. They're not working with their teams. That's why this is so important. It's not just a dictatorship. It's not just a title. Do what I tell you to do. Mentor your people. The great thing about the mentor leader is that it teaches how a mentor leader recovers from mistakes and handles team discipline. Let me tell you, when you understand that, because you're going to have mistakes, you're going to make mistakes, your team is going to make mistakes. When you understand how to handle those mistakes, how to handle those situations, and how to do team discipline without intimidation tactics, then guess what you get? Unity. Loyalty. You get the things from your team that you need to be successful as a team. How many times have you played for a coach, worked in a business where somebody just berated people, ripped their heads off, was just a total jerk, and nobody actually followed the person? They did their job. They showed up, did what they had to do, the least amount, to get through their day so that they could get a paycheck. But that leader, if that leader actually turned around, nobody was following them. That's why you got to understand that this is a great book. This will help you in your leadership. The Mentor Leader is fantastic. He also offers practical advice on becoming a mentor leader. Whether you're a coach, a business person, a teacher, pastor, or parent, this book, all of these books are for you. You're going to enjoy them. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Tony Dungy. How are you?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well. Doing well and looking forward to spending some time with you.
This is a huge honor for me. I have to give a shout out to my brother and my niece, Mario and Lacey, are huge Colts fans. And so
have to take care of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. When I told them I was going to do this, they were just so stoked. And I am a 49er faithful. Have been forever. We're from California.
Well, you're having a good year this year.
We're having a good year. It's funny. Recently, I've been, for the last few years, people ask, who's your team? And I would say, 49ers. I know. That would always follow. And now I'm like, it's just strong. We're doing really good, I think, now.
Yes.
So, but I am a big Dungy fan. Like I say, this is a huge honor for me. There's a lot of people in your position, that have been head coaches that you're just like, I'd like to meet those people. I'd like to talk to them. Man, your leadership style, your information, your books, everything have been just magic to me. I mean, it's been incredible. I love your style of leading your team.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris, and it's nothing magical. Learned it from being around some good coaches when I was playing, but basically from my parents, from my Christian upbringing, and it's not magic at all. It's very, very biblical.
I love that. I love that. That's what we are all about. In your book, Quiet Strength, you say this: more important, however, is the fact that I believe strongly in the idea of family. I can't very well preach unity and tell the guys we're all in this together and everyone's important, then cut a guy because we might improve by 1% if we bring in someone else. In your opinion, which is better, having the best players on a team or having a unified team?
Oh, I don't think there's any question having a unified team is more important. I tell people all the time, I was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts for 7 years, and we won one Super Bowl, and that Super Bowl team was probably our fourth or fifth most talented team. Mm. Our most talented teams didn't win for whatever reason, but that Super Bowl team was definitely the most unified. It was the most together. It was the team that believed in each other and stuck with each other through the tough times, and it was the most fun to coach because of the kind of guys we had. And I think that's what wins for you in the long haul. Talent obviously is going to get you to a certain level, but to really be successful, you have to work together, and everyone has to be in it for the same reason and on the same page.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'm a Niner fan, so Jerry's always been my guy. I love Jerry Rice. When T.O. came on, I was so stoked. I was like, okay, this guy, he was looking like he was going to put up the numbers. He was going to be another Jerry, but all kinds of interviews, all kinds of reports that came from there said that he kind of split that locker room. Now, obviously, I was not there, but it's one of the things I talk about all the time is hiring the right person. Now, is there any doubt that he is a fantastically talented man? Not at all. Absolutely. But there's no unity there, and that's absolutely important. As a leader, how do you build unity on a team? Like, give me some specific examples that you've used over the years to build a stronger, unified team.
Well, the first thing you do, I think, is select the right players and select people that do believe in that. You want guys who are fired up, who are excited, who want to do well and that have goals, but they have to be able to put those individual goals behind the team goals. Mm. And that's the most important thing. We spend a lot of time in selecting the right kind of guys, asking ourselves the question, if we bring this person in, is he going to be a good teammate? Is he going to fit in and buy into what we believe here? And then you spend time really creating that atmosphere, as you say. And sometimes as a head coach, as a leader, you try to create a little adversity. To me, that's what training camp is all about, that you bring the guys out there, you get them away from their families, you put them in two-a-day workouts in tough conditions, and you want them to say, you know what, we've got to be in this together if we're going to succeed. This is tough.
Wow.
And I thought the training camp atmosphere was so important for us. And then you try to build on moments where things don't go well. And how are we going to pull out of this? We've got to pull out of it with everyone and rely on everyone. And I think you learn more in those situations. You learn more from losses. You learn more from when you have to go back to the drawing board and do things a little differently.
Hmm. I love that. How are we going to pull out of this? I love that.
Yeah, and not rely on, hey, you know, let this person, let Peyton Manning do it all. I think that's where kind of the Colts are right now. They've lost Peyton Manning, lost their leader, and what it takes in that situation is, you know, 52 other guys stepping up and playing a little bit better, not saying, oh, I wish we had one person back, or who's going to be the one person who makes the difference. We've all got to do it.
Absolutely. So, and one thing you just said, I loved you. When you're bringing in talent, obviously, that's a no-brainer. But you're looking for somebody who's going to put team goals first?
Absolutely. And you know, you want guys that are motivated. You talk to them and interview them, and they say, hey, I want to do this, and I want to be the rookie of the year, and I want to gain 1,000 yards. That's all good.
And you want to hear that, but...
Yes, it has to come after the winning and fitting into the team goals and doing the little things that are going to help us win. So that was really, really important to us when I coached.
Mm. One of the things you said is hard work and togetherness, they go hand in hand. You need the hard work because it's such a tough atmosphere to win week in and week out. You need togetherness because you don't always win and you don't get to hang tough together. We both know that's easier said than done, obviously. But what was the biggest challenge you faced keeping a unified team, especially when things weren't going so well, and how did you overcome it?
Well, that's the thing that happens when you're winning and everything is going along great. It's pretty easy, or it's easier to be unified. Mm-hmm. But when you don't win, there's a tendency to look at, well, whose fault it is. Hey, was it the defense who's letting us down? They didn't hold up their end? Was it the offense who turned the ball over? And to really preach that and get guys to believe that, hey, when we don't get the job done, it's all of us. And I can remember some of my proudest moments in Tampa when we were, you know, really a defensive team, and we'd lose a game 10-6, and the defensive guys would say in the newspaper, we've got to play better, we've got to get the ball back for our offense, we may have to shut them out. You know, not pointing fingers, but saying, hey, what can we do to do our jobs and help the team? And that's what you want to build, that situation where if we win, we're all in it together, we're all going to share in the credit. If we lose, let me look at what I could do better and not what my teammates should have done better.
Right. Can you have a loyal team that's not unified?
I don't really believe you can, because loyalty starts with all of us being really there for one reason. Mm-hmm. And whether we're loyal to the head coach, whether we're loyal to the idea of winning, whether we're loyal to each other, we've got to have that common bond. And then once we have that, that's when we're going to grow as a team. And you can't be unified without having that common bond. And that's what I've found. You've got to have that. And that can be, you know, veteran players. It can be the head coach. It can be just that you've got so many guys who put winning first that's what brings them together. But you got to have unity of purpose.
Mm. I think I know what your answer would be. I mean, selfishly, it would be the coach. But what would be the one thing or the most important thing that you would want a team member to be loyal to? Would it be the coach? Would it be the team? Would it be winning?
You know, I always told the players, you don't have to be loyal to me. You know, hopefully I'm going to be here a long time. But it can't be, hey, you're loyal to me, and then I retire or I get fired, and, you know, everything falls apart. Another one of my proud moments was, you know, I got fired in Tampa, and the next year they won the Super Bowl. And I just feel like they had guys who believed in each other and that they had bought into winning was the most important thing. Whether I was there, whether I wasn't, whether their teammates are there or not, that, hey, we're here to do a job. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's that loyalty to the purpose, to the cause, more so than to the individual person or the head coach.
That is what I love about Tony Dungy. The fact that you just said one of your proudest moments is after getting fired. I mean, that's amazing, your
well,
humility.
Well, you know, we came in and we had some goals together. The guys that came in my first year in 96, young players, we had some great young players. But we said, hey, we want to win a Super Bowl for the city. We want to build this into a place where people want to come and play. We want to do it the right way and make our city a better place to live. And the fact that they got there after I was gone, it was painful for me, and I wished I'd have been there with them. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that they did get there, and they did accomplish those goals that we had set out years earlier, and I was proud of them.
Yeah, I got to believe that it is the effect of a great leader that once they're gone, if the team is able to continue on or do better, then it's what that leader has done while they were in that place. So I believe that a huge amount of that is owed to you as well. When did you start thinking of yourself as a leader? Now, obviously, you thought of yourself as a leader on the field, I would believe.
You know, my high school coach actually kind of instilled that in me. I never really thought of that. As I was growing up, we had a bunch of guys who did a lot of things together, played a lot of sports together in my neighborhood. And my high school coach, when I was a 10th grader playing quarterback, he said, you know what, you are a leader, and you're going to lead these guys the right way or the wrong way. They're going to follow you. And that's probably the first time I really thought consciously about it. And then when I got to the Minnesota Vikings as an assistant coach, our chaplain, a guy by the name of Tom Lamphere, he said, you know what, I would like to meet with you once a week and go through the book of Nehemiah, and it's a book about leadership. He said, because one day you're going to be a head coach, and you're going to need some of these lessons. And a few years before that, I may have shied away from that or said, oh, no, Tom, I don't know about that. But I think I was ready at that point, and I said, you know, you're right. I would like to study this and see if I can become a stronger leader.
Do you, as a high school student, you were told you're either going to lead these people the right way or the wrong way. What does it take? Now, obviously, you had great fondness for your parents. What does it take in today's kids? Do you think our high school kids can hear that same thing and take that on and run with it?
You know, it's tough being a leader in high school. And one of the things you have to do is you have to kind of go against the grain and not worry about being popular. And that's hard for young people. It's hard for all of us.
It's hard for adults.
We want to fit in. We want the crowd to like us. But being liked and being respected is sometimes two different things. Mm. And to do things the right way, to know what's right, stick up for your convictions, to be that big brother, if you will, that is giving the right advice and looking out for people, even when it's tough criticism that you may have to give, that is hard, especially for young people. Yeah. And that's what I tell guys all the time when I speak to junior high athletes, high school athletes, knowing what to do, knowing the right thing, and then having the convictions to do it all the time, that's what's going to make you a great leader, and that's what's going to make your team better.
Mm. I love that answer, because not only is that to high school students, but to all the business leaders, all the business owners that are listening to this right now, it applies exactly to them. So that's awesome.
Which, and it's hard. I know I used to have to pray. I prayed a lot as a head coach. Let me make the right decisions. Let me do what's best for the team. Let me do what's right in this situation. And, you know, sometimes it goes against what you feel, what you would like to do. Sometimes it really goes against what's the easiest thing to do. Mm. But having that just knowledge that you have to do what's best for your group, that's what makes great leaders, in my opinion.
What is that? I've got to ask this. What is that like to be sitting there on the sidelines, I'm sure praying during a game for the right decisions with 70,000 people, you know, with their opinions on what you need to do next, because the grandstand coaches are always the best coaches. I'm surprised at how many coaches are in the grandstands and they're not on the fields. What is that like?
Well, for me, it was reassuring, and I did it a lot, and people don't always know that you're doing it or had no idea that you are, But I would do that. Hey, let me pray for this decision. We've got a big decision coming up. It's fourth down. What should we do? Sneak a little prayer in there because, you know, you want to do the right things. And for me, that was important.
Mm. What advice would you give to young leaders that you wished someone would have given to you when you were starting out?
You know, it's really biblical advice that when you're leading, you are serving. You're trying to help your people be the best that they can be. And if you understand that that's the job of the leader, you're going to be much more effective. It's not that you have to show how much you know, that you have to show that you're the boss. If you help people do their job, help them grow, that's what leadership is all about.
Mm. In the book, Mentor Leader, which I love that book, you talk about something that we talk about all the time. I'm always constantly telling people that your job is to make your team successful. That's it. Your job as a leader is not to dictate stuff. Your job is to make your team successful. You say your only job is to help your players be better. What do you mean by that?
Well, that was, again, the best advice I got from Chuck Knoll. I was 25 years old when I started working for him as a coach, and I said, you know, I've never coached before. What do you want me to do? And it was so simple, it was stunning. He said, you know, if you just remember, your job is to help your players play better.
Mm.
And that meant that you've got to learn each guy who's under you. You've got to know what he needs. You've got to help him in the way he needs it. If he needs discipline, you've got to give it. If he needs encouragement, you've got to give it. If he needs technique, you've got to give it. So your job, you can't have just one job description. It's what do you need to do to help each person be the best that they can be? My dad said it another way. He was a teacher, and he said, you know, he felt his job was to help every student get an A. And, you know, my job isn't to trick them. It's not to make the hardest tests I can make. It's not to have people fail. It's to help them get A's. And I've always kept that in mind, and I felt that my job wasn't to, you know, see how much credit I could get or to see show the world how smart I was or how many schemes I knew in football. If I could help all my guys play the best that they could play, we were going to have a good team.
Mm. And that's so contradictory to what people are thinking leadership is all about nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
If you make your team, if you make your players better, they win, you win.
Yes.
Plain and simple.
Yes. And it's not that, hey, I have to discipline them. I have to be the guy that they're afraid of. I have to be the one that everybody comes to for the answers. Not necessarily. Just help them play better.
Absolutely. So tell us what's next for you. What are you working on right now?
Oh, I've got a few projects. I do work with a prison outreach here in Tampa that we, you know, try to help guys to make better decisions and to rehabilitate their lives. I work with a fatherhood program called All Pro Dad. Those are the two big charities that I do a lot of work with. We have a family foundation, my wife and my siblings, and we work with a lot of youth organizations. My wife and I have a reading program in Tampa now where we go around to elementary schools and read to the kids and leave books and, you know, talk to them about how important it is to read and develop those learning skills. So we're excited. And then we've got we still have seven kids, so that's a kind of a job in itself.
No kidding, man. Tony, you're just amazing. You're just incredible. I love what you've given more than anything. I mean, I have not personally seen anything of you taking. All I see over and over and over and over again is you giving. So that you're just very impressive.
Well, I've gotten a lot of blessings from the Lord and been in a lot of great organizations and had a lot of good things happen to me. So to be able to give back a little bit, it's not that big a deal at all.
I love it. All right, we are here in Nashville. So before I let you go, I've got to ask you a question. Why do you think Chris Johnson is struggling so much for the Titans this season?
Well, it happens. And new coach, new offense, high expectations, and the fact that everybody's kind of zeroed in on him. When you sign that big contract, you become the focal point of the team's defenses. So I think I've gotten to compete against Chris a little bit. I think he'll bounce back, but he's finding out how tough it is when you're a marked man.
No doubt about that. No doubt. Well, Tony, I can't tell you how much of an honor this is for me. This has been fantastic. I know our listeners are loving this, And so thank you so very much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. You have a great rest of your day. Tony All Dungy, right. Everybody. Well, folks, that was a fun interview. And if you think about it, we're talking about a Super Bowl winning coach. We're talking about somebody who's not only been successful in the NFL, but somebody who's been successful in life. And everything that he talked about right there pointed back to a couple of things. The Bible, which is one. Also, giving. In every aspect, in every answer, you heard a piece about you as a leader need to be giving. What are you giving? The things that your team needs to be successful. I'll say it again. Your job as a leader is to make your team successful. And if you heard what he said the most talented teams don't win. The most unified teams do. It's not about talent. I've made that mistake. I've hired a couple of TOs in my past. You know, a couple of guys that it was all about them. They had talent, but unfortunately, they tore up the team. It's not worth it. Unity is what you're looking for. The most unified teams win. Well, that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books. We hope that you enjoyed today. We hope that you enjoyed Dave's lesson and the interview with Tony. If you want more information about Entree Leadership, make sure you make your way on over to the Entree Leadership website, entreeleadership.com. Also, we want to make sure that you're following us on Twitter, at Entree Leadership, at E-N-T-R-E Leadership, also at Chris Locurto. That's Chris, C-H-R-I-S-L-O-C-U-R-T-O. And you can also send us your information, your questions at podcast@entreeleadership.com or visit the site chrislocurto.com. I want to say some thank yous, obviously, to Tony Dungy for an incredible interview. Some great information right there. But I also want to thank, as always, the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our Cincinnati Bengals fan. Colin Fatke, our Green Bay Packers fan. Becky Powell, our Atlanta Falcons fan. And, of course, Dave Ramsey, our diehard Tennessee Titans fan. Folks, go out there, take this information, make some differences, make some changes in your life, in your leadership, in your team. We look forward to talking to you on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
My wife used to call me a Sunday jerk. Why? Because every Sunday as we got closer and closer to Monday, I became a jerk. I could feel the pressure of Monday morning building on Sunday nights. I didn't want to spend another 40 hours in another cubicle for another week of work I didn't love. Maybe you have a job like that. Or maybe you like your job, but you know deep down there's something bigger and more important you'd really like to be doing. Or maybe you've lost your job and this is the chance for you to figure out what you're going to do next. Join me, John Acuff, on February 10th and 11th for the Quitter Conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Based on my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Quitter, this exciting two-day event will help you figure out what your dream really is. Beat the three biggest fears that keep you from pursuing your dream. Use social media to build the one thing every dream needs to succeed. And much, much more. The best part? Tickets are only $99, but space is limited. To sign up for the Quitter Conference on February 10th and 11th, visit johnacuff.com/events. That's johnacuff.com/events.
Folks, right now couldn't be a better time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, for the one-day event based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. At Entree Leadership One Day, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a business. You'll learn about goal setting, communication, and yes, even accounting. This material is changing the way people view business and leadership. You won't find this stuff in some college business class. This is 20 years in the trenches of leading and actually running a business. This is how our company works. It's leadership training for everyone. When you do what you love with your life, your vocation can become your vacation. Learn how at Entree Leadership One Day in Atlanta on January 20th. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.
Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Master Series event. This event offers personal leadership coaching from our executive team, in addition to Dave teaching you his entire business playbook. We're thrilled to announce that our next event will be at the gorgeous Westin La Paloma Resort in Tucson, Arizona, May 6th through the 12th. Our last event sold out early. These events always sell out early because they're limited to 200 people. So if you want to lock in a seat, you better call our team today at 888-227-3223. Just ask for me, Daniel Tardy.